Now, I want to play a very special request, albeit a little late. My apologies. But it's a very special request for Kathleen Doherty in Carn Ballybuffet. Kathleen is celebrating her 93rd birthday today. Granny Doherty, as she's affectionately known, is hale and hearty and will be looking forward to all her visitors today to help her celebrate. Best wishes and love coming in from Siobhan, Tommy and all the family. So a very, very happy birthday, 93rd birthday to Kathleen Doherty in Carn. And I've been asked to mention that the Malin Head to Glengad Road will be closed at Urbalria, is it? From 8 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Wednesday the 11th, Thursday the 12th and Friday the 13th of October. The road will be closed from its junction with the Black Mountain Road to the junction with the Drenna Road. Alternative route is the Black Mountain Road, Tully Road, Drenna Road, Malin Head to Glengad Road. Donegal County Councillor apologising for any inconvenience this closure may cause. Right, okay. We're joined on the programme now by Sinead Smith. Sinead, thank you for taking the call this morning.
Oh, you're very welcome. A very happy birthday to Kathleen and Carn Dona.
Yes, indeed. Right, Sinead, you say you've thought long and hard about whether or not you should share this, and you decided, feck it, nothing to use your words. But you say, Sinead, it needs to be called out. What's the issue?
Well, the issue was that we had we run an artist retreat here in Carn Dona, and it's how I earn my living, being an artist, teaching painting and providing these retreats for people. And during the winter here now, coming into the winter, we decided to go on to a couple of booking platforms to try and even things out a bit, you know, because things can get a wee bit slow. So we had our first visitor through a booking app, and they just booked for two people. And we have our policy of, if you're bringing a pet, let us know. We have a one pet policy. Because you know yourself, dogs getting together, they're jumping all over each other and rolling around, playing, whatever. That's just dogs. But they had come over from England via Cork. They'd gone to Cork first and then come up to us after a long journey. And it was dark on the Friday night. And I showed them around the cottage, went back out, and I could see there was a dog in the car. So I always make it a habit of meeting the dog just so we know it's a friendly dog. So we have a child and I always say, don't go near that dog. It's a wee bit angry or it's a wee bit anxious or, leave, you know, just leave it alone. Or that dog's friendly, you can pet it. And she opened the door and three dogs jumped out. Wow. A large husky and two collies. And I was like, oh, holy God, okay. And the husky legged it up the road. So they had very little control over the dog, and alarm bells just were going off in my head. But you know, I suppose you don't like, I don't like confrontation, and I don't like turning people away.
It left you in a very difficult position, Sinead, because you did ask for prior notice, and you've got a one dog rule, which I think would cover most. They didn't let you know they had pets. They land with three rather big dogs and one at least rather lively. You're stood there. What do you do next?
I know. And you don't like people not having a bed for the night. Maybe that's just me being from an issue one. You know, you like to be welcoming.
Yeah.
And I just went in and said to my husband, just say a wee prayer that we're left in a good position after this, that they're nice people and whatever. But they left very early on the Sunday morning because our dog barks at the slightest noise outside, and we were woken about half seven, 8 o'clock, I think. And I, well, after we got up, I went and checked in the cottage, and they had gone completely.
And were they scheduled to stay longer, Sinead?
No,
okay.
No, they weren't. They were, but we don't expect people to leave, you know, until about 12 o'clock on a Sunday.
And just before you progress the story, it's a particularly nice property that you have.
It is. I always have had this dream of providing a wee bit of luxury, especially for creative people. There's an art studio attached to it, you see, so they have access 24/7. And beautiful, like I spent a lot of time on deciding the decor myself. And, you know,
it's an experience you're offering, isn't it? It's not simply a bed. You're obviously trying to give people an experience. And it's often and very much so appreciated, as you've been very busy. So
people work hard for their money,
you know. Sure.
And if I'm going to take it from them, I want to give them something nice.
So it's clear then they've left. So it's time to go into the property. What were you met with?
I was met with dog pee on the floor beside the kitchen sink, dog pee on the carpet, big stains, muddy footprints all over the carpet beside the fire, and thick with hair, like caked. And because they had three dogs, I had been very civil with them, but kind of very, you know, we don't allow dogs in the bedrooms to keep the integrity of our bedding, because we may have, you know, when dogs come, we do a good clean after. But guests may have allergies to dogs, so we don't allow them in the bedrooms. And they were like, oh, no, that's reasonable. Well, the dogs had been, they had spread the bed covers, like patchwork quilts and lovely blankets over the beds, and the dogs had been sleeping on the beds. Mm. One of the rooms was so humid from, obviously, from dog breath, because it stank, that I had to get the dehumidifier in, you know, and the hairs were just unbelievable.
And it sounds like the dogs had been running around, getting messy, coming in, shaking their coats, jumping
everywhere,
all over everything, because the walls were spattered.
The walls, the paintwork. You know, if someone was having a party in there of a night and they spilt red wine all over the floor or on the carpet or down the cupboards or on the walls and the radiators, they would clean it up.
Mm.
But they just up and left. They just left.
At this point then, the bathroom as well even got a touch. So at this point then, it's a deep clean, and presumably any money you were going to make out of the whole experience is gone now.
Yeah, well, I mean, we would have asked 230 for the two nights, the Friday and the Saturday. And, you know, I spent approximately 10 hours cleaning. Now, I'm not a cleaner by trade. So somebody, if I'd have hired somebody, they may have done it faster. But if I paid myself the minimum wage, $11.30 an hour, for 10 hours, you're taking away $113 from that, minus the booking fee from the platform, minus the wear and tear, and five loads of washing. Everything had to be washed. The cushion covers and the sofas had to be wiped down. They'd allowed them up there as well. Unbelievable, you know. And we try to be environmentally friendly, so you're cleaning products are more expensive.
So,
you know,
what does this mean for your one dog policy then? I mean, you know, it's obvious that you wanted to sort of, you recognise the importance of a dog in a family's life, or an individual's life for that matter. But I mean, do you think twice about it now?
Well, if I'd had that experience already, it's a learning process for us because we've just been open a year.
Mm.
And, you know, I have a lovely artist coming from England who's arriving tonight for a full week in tuition and everything. So it's a different kettle of fish, I suppose. But if that had happened, if that ever happens again, I will simply be saying, I'm sorry, you're not our problem.
Are you worried now that you have to worry too now that you're not nose blind with having been in there all the time? I'm sure your guest won't notice. It sounds like you've went to town with the clean.
Well, I had to.
Mm.
There was marks on everything.
Unbelievable.
You know?
That sounds like a silly question. Did they leave a review, Sinead?
No.
Okay.
No. No review. We contacted them and asked them for an additional cleaning fee of €30.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I think all in all, taking everything out of it, we probably came out with €20 for that.
Yeah.
Plus the stress and the frustration and disappointment.
Yeah, and it's also incredibly disrespectful, you know, to do that to somebody else's property. I mean, you could have turned them away at the first contact, but you did lay down some basic ground rules, which I don't think were unreasonable at all. And they were obviously completely and utterly ignored, because they even went beyond a dog running into a bedroom accidentally. They bedded the dogs in there with
They bedded the dogs in there.
Okay.
Yeah, and I mean, it's not the dogs.
Of course not. No, I know what you're saying.
Yes. It's a matter of, you know, mutual respect and general soundness that we allow animals into the cottage. And most people are. Now, we have had a visitor during the summer who allowed the dog on the bed and there was a stain on the mattress and we had to get that cleaned. And they didn't even leave a review either. So, you know, you can bend over backwards for people.
Okay.
And nothing, you know, it just depends on the individual.
But in a way, too, what is sad is that it kind of has made you have to adjust your philosophy to some extent, not to a great extent, but in other words, like what you wanted to offer, what you believed you could provide. Now you're at the point whereby if someone lands in the same situation again, you actually have to do that confrontation. You actually have to turn them away. So in a way, it's kind of, it's spoilt really a little bit of the sort of philosophy. It's clear you've put a lot of time and effort into this. It's a shame really, but you have to make those adjustments.
And then you run the risk of getting a bad review for doing something like that. And a bad review, we've been in operation a year. We've just got the status of super host with Airbnb for the few we've done there. But all our reviews were 5-star, and one person left a 4-star review because they said it was too cold and they wanted the heating turned up. And when we went over to turn the heating up for them, they had all the windows and the back door lying full open.
You see, Sinead, people are strange. We're all strange in a way. But do you know what I mean? And that's when you're in the service industry.
But it took us ages to get our review back up, you know. But that's what you're against.
Of course, you know. All right, Sinead. Well, listen, thanks for sharing the story with us.
Thank you so much for asking me on.
No, it's just a sickener. But look, I'm sure your guest arriving for the week. We'll have a lovely stay and hopefully it'll ease the memory of your previous experience. Thanks, Sinead.
Thank you very much.
Take care of yourself. Right, bye-bye. Now, Fergal Blaney's the political editor of the Irish Mirror. He joins us on the programme now. Good morning to you. Thank you for joining us. I do appreciate it.
Good morning.
Right, now, you've published today part one of a special investigation into, I suppose, the ease of access for teenagers and vapes, Fergal. What stood out for you?
Exactly. I suppose what prompted our investigation was, it's obviously been in the news a lot lately about vaping, and everybody sees the little disposable products on every street corner on the ground. So we were curious on that, and we asked the HSE if there were any incidents where people were getting seriously hurt from vapes. And we were shocked to discover that last year there were 7 people hospitalized, children. 7 children were hospitalized, vape-related incidents. So it was 0 in the 2 years before that. It was 7 last year, and we don't know what it is yet this year. So that prompted our interest. But obviously, we seem to be having a little bit of an epidemic. So we've gone to a couple of areas on this, and we'll be exploring it more over the coming days. So we have our response from the HSC 7, which is very shocking. And then we got on to a teacher down in Tipperary, this principal, Peter Creedon. And he told us some very, very, very disturbing news of what it's like at the coalface. He had a student that was able to toy with the wattage on one of the vaping machines to basically turn up the heat. Yeah. And he suffered a very, very serious reaction. He collapsed in the schoolyard. The ambulance was called. And he was told by first responders, the teacher, that it was touch and go for a while. So that was very, very serious. So we've moved it on to political level as well. Then we will be over the coming days. We talked to Taoiseach Micheál Martin, because everyone will remember he's really famous all over the world for bringing in the actual smoking ban 20 years ago now. And he's very, very concerned about this. And he told us yesterday that this he considers vaping because, by the way, not everyone knows, but the vapes, the companies that own them are big tobacco as such.
Yep,
and he called it revenge. Yeah,
Fergal,
he called it revenge.
Well, is there any? Yeah, indeed, an interesting quote there. But listen, we had early warnings of this an awful long time ago, as you would know. In America, we're kind of reaching the point that they did now 6-7 years ago, and other countries have taken strong action. I think we're a bit of a laggard in terms of banning these sale of these to under 18s. Has anyone ever in political circles given an excuse as to why this has been allowed to become the epidemic that it has? Because still to this day, you walk into a shop, they've got a sexy TikTok-shaped screen behind the counter, promoting vaping. all the different flavors, the fancy little machines that are there, impulse purchase. Like, has anyone in political circles actually responded as to why it's only now they seem to be waking up to this issue?
It's scary. It's scary. I suppose my simple answer is politics moves very slowly. Politics is a bit of a tanker when it comes to issues like this. They will always say that it takes time to introduce legislation, that they have to, or the dreaded reports that they have to commission. They have finally got some sort of legislation on the table. It's the Public Health Tobacco Products and Nicotine Inhaling Bill. But so that's stuck in committee land at the moment. It's actually going to be there tomorrow. And when that does come in, if it comes in sometime next year, we would definitely not see before the end of this year. It's going to ban sales of vapes for under 18s. Mm. But as you say, that does nothing for where we are now, where you've got the brightly coloured bubblegum flavours. And, you know, vaping advocates will say, oh, it's a, you know, smoking cessation advice that they're giving to people. But, you know, I don't see many adults that would like to have cola bottles.
I mean, we could find ourselves in the situation, Fergal, whereby legislation will be passed once it's announced in the budget later today. Legislation will be passed before the end of the year to enact a tax on vaping products.
We were hopeful of that.
Yeah, but before the legislation comes in to ban them for the sale of under-18s. Like, I think parents and guardians, it's tough out there, isn't it, Fergal? They need a hand on this one.
It is. It's complicated, it's intricate, and the vapes tax, confusingly, like you say, is completely separate to the Public Health Nicotine Inhaling Products Bill. The indications are now that it will be mentioned in the speech today. They do this sometimes in government. Mm. They mention that a tax is coming, but then they say, oh, well, we need to do more work on it. So my sources tell me that it's going to be next year, perhaps in the budget next year, as far away as that the vaping tax will be brought in. Mm-hmm. That'll be another tactic from the government as well for everybody, not just for children, to try and make vaping very dear, on a par with cigarettes perhaps someday, and that they hope that will drive people away from it. But I'm not so sure, because once you make something a little more illicit and a little more illegal, especially amongst children and young adults, it's going to make it more attractive for them.
And do you know what's never considered?
Can I add one of them?
Yeah, go ahead. Please add away. Yep.
Sorry, one of the main points of our day, one of the investigation today, was we just sent a 14-year-old out with his parents' permission, of course, and we sent him out to vaping shops in Dublin, and within an hour, he had a armful of vaping products. They never asked him for ID. He was only 14. There is no law against it, you see. But some shops, mainly the multiple supermarkets, etc., did say, what age are you? And no, we don't want to sell to under 18s. But as it stands, and we proved it today, youngsters, we know they're vaping as young as 10, we're told by the school principals. Youngsters can go into any of these vaping shops. They sell other devices as well. You see them in every high street in Ireland. And there's no law against it at present. And we don't really know what's in them, except that they can be very dangerous if they are abused, as we saw with the poor child who collapsed and an ambulance was called to Tipperary.
Yeah, indeed. And that was the shocking element of the reports, that the injuries. And those are the ones that we hear of. But what I was going to say also, Fergal, before you passed on that important information, is that, like everything, when legislation is written and passed in Dublin, it doesn't often take it into account border counties. We've seen that with coal, we've seen it through COVID, and I think we're going to see it with vapes again, in that, you know, it will perhaps benefit the majority, but we're still probably going to be in a situation where, these products are easily accessible across the border and people will start to travel for them if they have an addiction. More so now, I'm talking about the adults than the teens, Fergal, but, you know, we need to start doing stuff on an all-island basis.
We do, of course, yeah. There needs to be a joined-up thinking there, which is often lacking. And in the post-Brexit days as well, it's people are divided on all sorts of trade issues. Mm. So you're hitting another point there that's down the tracks again, past legislation that we need to work with our colleagues in the north, because thank God there's no real such border as such anymore.
Yeah.
And it's very easy for people to get products that they want in one jurisdiction or the other and easily transport them and do what they want with them.
All right, Fergal, the investigation continues tomorrow. Is that correct? Is it?
Yeah, tomorrow we have the Taoiseach Taoiseach speaking to us, Micheál Martin, and then we'll concentrate on schools and then the medics. We have people like consultant respiratory consultant Des Cox and John Crown, who's an oncologist who everybody will remember was a senator a few years ago and very outspoken.
Sure. All right, listen, Fergal, thanks for that. It's in the Mirror today and we'll continue for the rest of the week. Have a lovely day. That is the political editor of the Irish Mirror, Fergal Blaney there. All right, welfare increases, tax cuts, they're among the budget measures which the Cabinet is signing off on this morning. It'll have a range of cost of living payments included, including three energy credits of €150 each. Michael McGrath will outline the full budget in a dull speech at 1 p.m. But an awful lot of it's already been outlined, as is the norm. Now, to help us see what's in this, John Lowe of The Money Doctors joins us. John, great to have you back on. How are you keeping?
Very well indeed, Greg, and you look great.
Oh, thank you very much. That's very kind of you. Right, so, I mean, can you frame this, or could not you? Could this be framed as a giveaway budget? There's something for everyone in the audience, but is there enough, I suppose, for it to have the impact the government parties are hoping?
Well, there's obviously one eye on the next election, that's for sure. But in fairness, we are suffering quite a lot. Every aspect of our nation, from, you know, the low pay to the high paid, even the squeezed middle, as they call them. But you know, I've been certainly campaigning for a while on the fact that, you know, the buy to let, the investment properties, they're allowed 100% interest on the mortgage. But yet the poor, unfortunate homeowners who have these huge mortgages, along with the fact that for 14 months they had 10 increases. Well, they're finally getting some respite. So there's a mortgage break up to, what, 1,250 for those homeowners who had a home loan between 80,000 and half a million at the end of last year. What they will get is 20% relief on the increased amount of interest paid on their mortgage between 2022 and 2023. So that covers those, basically, there's 10 increases.
And does that still only apply to those on tracker or variables? There'd be no interest relief for those who fixed, I wonder.
I think it's only going to apply to those on trackers, because maybe the variables may squeeze in there as well. But certainly the fixed rates, there were a lot of people, a lot of my clients who fixed last Christmas, you know, they fixed, Greg, at like 2.05% for 5 years. Mm-hmm. You know, they're laughing all the way to the bank. It's good to see tax credit for renters as well. That's going to go from 500 a year to 800. I think that's a fair enough comment. You know, rents have also gone through the roof, and they certainly need some support.
And there is the danger. Now, you see that we have this situation where the majority of people listening, this doesn't feel like it's relevant to them. But we have a economy that is performing very, very well. And we have seen a reduction in inflation, but that doesn't mean the cost of things aren't going up. And there is genuine concern that's come from many quarters, except for government, that this budget and the way it's been framed could actually drive inflation back up again, and I suppose negate really some of the function of interest rate increases. That remains to be seen, but it is certainly a risk that this could add extra fire to an already hot economy, John.
You're absolutely right, Greg, because it's going to certainly with, like, they're dealing with fire here. You know, they've increased, for instance, the top rate of tax from, you know, to 40,000. At the moment, you pay the 40% tax rate over 40,000. That'll soon go up to 42,000. All of these little, you know, moves by the government are going to add, I mean, 6% at the moment is inflation. And you're right, it could creep up again as a result of all these little mini breaks that they're giving social welfare. And I've been harping on again about the pension. The pension's going up by 12 euros a week. So that'll be, what, 277 euro. And, you know, like in 20 years' time, Greg, we won't be able to afford the pensions for the burgeoning amount of increased pensioners who are retiring. Like, we'll have three times the numbers we have today. And yet, instead of having five workers for every person who retired, as we had last year, there'll be two. So physically, it's not going to, the money is just not coming in. Like, we're already down, what, 23% in the corporation tax this year. Like, there won't be enough workers paying coffers into the exchequer funds to actually fund the 1.8 million people that will be over the age of 67, certainly, by 2050.
Maybe that's why they're so keen to see the population growth. Who's to say that that's not one function of that? But also, too, obviously, it'll be sold again as a budget, and I'm not saying it's not the case, as one that is to sort of help the squeezed middle, you know, the working poor. But, you know, like some people might frame it that someone working, the working poor, will only end up €3 or €4 a week better off than someone who's on social welfare, because they're going to see an increase of €12 per week as well. And I think it will probably be worth about €15 or €16 to your average worker. So, you know, some might say, well, that's not really fair because, you know, we're working out there and people don't work for lots of reasons. But they might not see enough of a gap in that to be satisfied that this is good for them.
You see, one of the problems here about your squeezed middle is that all of the costs, like food, the childcare costs, they're all net income. Like, you have to have a net income to pay for your child to go to a creche or go to kindergarten or go to even Montessori. Also the same for food. Oh, food has gone through the roof. I mean, I believe it or not, Greg, I've come across couples who are on, between them, over 200,000, and they can't cope. They can't cope. They have a huge mortgage, which went out of sync, you know. They've got the food, they've got all the creche.
Childcare can be the equivalent of a mortgage. And John, also, too, like, a lot of this feels to me a little bit about moving the deck chairs around, because, you know, the big news that emerged really for me in the last couple of weeks is the cost of getting to net zero, $700 billion. And it really hasn't been talked about or figured out as to how the government gets to that point, compensating farmers, moving farmers away from farming, not having the tax take on petrol, oil, diesel. You know, and that is coming down the line really, really shortly. You talked of the pension time bomb. The net zero time bomb is absolutely huge. And to be honest with you, if a budget's not really referencing that now in 2023, it would make me wonder how seriously really this whole net zero project is being taken. Let me say that figure again, $700 billion.
Well, the Green Party, of course, would argue with you, Greg, and say that they have managed to persuade the government to have $3 billion into a little kind of fund to help them, you know, deal with the farmers, deal with the diesel and the petrol. How they're going to distribute that or how they're going to play it out is going to be interesting. But you're absolutely right. It is $700 billion. And just in case people don't know what that is, that's 700,000 million, by the way.
Unbelievable stuff, isn't it, John?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a few questions coming in about the nitty-gritties of it, like working family payments and what have you. There's some stuff has been leaked, but I'm not sure enough has been leaked to get, as I say, down into the nitty-gritties of it. We're going to have to really wait to see what is there. And then people will add up what the benefit is to them in terms of reduced childcare cost, you know, USC changes, tax changes and what have you. So really, it's probably going to take until tomorrow before we can, as I say, get into the nitty-gritty of it, John.
Well, you know, again, a lot of the stuff which is out there, you know, you've got the universal social charge, which is going to go from 4.5% down to 4%. I mean, you look at the government for 4 or 5 years ago, they said they want to get rid of it. It was going to be incorporated into the PRSI and there was going to be just one tax. They still haven't done that. As I say, also, you know, they got double child payment, child benefit before Christmas. And a double welfare payment after Christmas. So you've got then the three 150 energy credits, one before Christmas, two after Christmas. They're all going to add to at least some amelioration for those who are really struggling. There's a lot of families out there struggling.
But with that in mind, John, are you surprised that they're still persisting with universal payments and not targeted payments? Are you surprised they're still focusing on universal payments? So in other words, you could have, you can have someone who's a millionaire, a billionaire, and will get a €150 tax credit, do you think, or an energy credit, sorry. Are you surprised that they haven't used the resources that we'd have through their revenue and welfare to target some of these measures that you could actually give more to those that need it more?
I am surprised at that. I do know, in fact, I have come across people, families who are wealthy and individuals who are wealthy and who won't take those kind of breaks and they will pay them back. Unfortunately, they're few and far between. But I think it should be, I mean, they have the wherewithal to be able to differentiate between those who really do need the money and those who don't. So why don't we use that resource?
Mm-hmm. And I suppose it's never a bad time, is it? Maybe when taxes are being changed and payments are being changed to, I suppose, look at your own finances, John. We talk about this regularly, and there are tools there for that. Make sure you're not paying direct debits that are for nothing, and start budgeting a little bit and looking after the money that you have. I think sometimes we're all a little bit guilty of, you know, not keeping an eye, our eye as closely on things as we should.
It's very easy. It's very easy, Greg, to, you know, first of all, do a budget planner kind of spreadsheet. I mean, I offer one, and if anybody wants to write to me, I'd be very happy to give them our budget planner spreadsheet, which tots itself up, has all the categories. And the thing about it is, when you sat down with your wife, the bottle of wine on the kitchen table and your laptop, and you fill it all out and you see what your expenditure is, you ask yourself two questions. Number one, do I need it? Number two, is there a better or cheaper alternative? And really, at the end of the day, if you are spending more than you're earning, you've got three choices. And one is earn more, two is cut costs, and the third one is prioritize. And prioritize, you know, in the last 5 years, 300,000 people stopped paying their health insurance. They simply couldn't afford it, Greg.
Yeah, of course. And then also, too, if you're lucky enough to have some disposable income, that would probably sort of, you know, so what am I doing with the extra money? Because I'm not seeing it in my account. And it all, as I say, it works for everyone dependent on their circumstance. John, as always, thank you very much indeed. Moneydoctors.ie, if you want to make contact and find out more information. Have a lovely day. Anyone who travels to, through, or into Letterkenny will have noticed that it's a hard town now to get around at quite a few times in the day. There are bottlenecks and what have you, an awful lot of frustration and people getting caught up. And you know, the sad thing is if people end up avoiding going into Letterkenny, because that then has a knock-on impact on businesses and other services, and we don't want to see that, do we? Councillor Jay McMonagle is tabling a motion today at a council meeting on this matter. Good morning, Jerry. Thanks for taking the time again to talk to us. I appreciate it.
No bother, Greg. And just was remiss of me yesterday, but congratulations to you and the team on your recent award. Well deserved.
Right. No, I appreciate that, Jerry. I really do. Okay, so I mean, you, if you're a motorist or you live in Letterkenny or you travel into it, you know there's increasing frustration out there. Is it more traffic or worse management of it? I mean, obviously there are professionals that will hopefully offer the answers to that, but what do you think is going on? Why is it so difficult to get around Letterkenny?
Well, look, the bottom line is that with the increased volume of traffic coming into town, the town is not set to manage that traffic flow. As you know, we have the Port Bridge. We have been for over 20 years campaigning to get another bridge, and which is termed as the Bonnegie Link. That's slowly but surely come to fruition. But in the meantime, the traffic build-up has been there, and it's now, I mean, saying to anybody that wants to look at it, that we would need at least three bridges in Letterkenny, one from the Neath Hill Bainey Road over to Leck Road, and one then from the Rock Hill Road area over to the Grantys Road. So until they go and come into place, there's a number of initiatives have been introduced by council. The latest one will be the traffic lights at the Polestar roundabout. But my motion today is about getting the NTA to take notice of what's happening here in Letterkenny. I mean, it's our responsibility to ensure around public transport, and that, you know, that there isn't the congestion that there is. Yeah. We have a number of ideas that we've been discussing for a number of years now. Park and ride facilities on the edge of the town, a proper and efficient public transport system. And look, the council is in a position to get all that's needed for that to happen. So what I'm looking for is the NTA to come under Letterkenny, look at it, and give us whatever supports and resources that are needed to implement, one, a public bus service that is efficient and effective, and two, that we can start mapping out the park and ride facilities, and that we, you know, we get the necessary finances to put them in place.
Nothing exists at the moment, does it? There's no town bus, there's no public transport to navigate the various parts of the town, be it from the ATU to the shopping centre, you know, down to the lower main street, across over to the retail park out there. There's no public transport.
It's very frustrating, for us as councillors, but I'm sure it's equally frustrating for the ordinary people out there. We've been in discussions with bus providers for 3 or 4 years now. We thought we had a good service that was looked good on paper. It was being presented as a way forward where it would enable that there would be 3 buses on the go all the time, that they'd be there from early morning to late into the evening, that they would provide transport for people going to work and also for taking them home from work, and that in between that, during the day, there'd be regular service to different parts of the town. But this seems to have fallen through, and we need to get the NTA in. We've had a presentation from the local link company there recently. You're doing fantastic work right across the county. And I think they've got the wherewithal and the plan to put in place a proper bus service in Letterkenny. But that's work that we have to get at. And I think without those extra resources from the NTA, that there will be a long way down the road.
And also too, you know, there are ambitious plans in terms of investment in Letterkenny, the development of Letterkenny, the growing of the population in Letterkenny. But your infrastructure, not just the public transport, but the roads infrastructure has to match that. I mean, it has to be a multi-tiered approach, doesn't it? You can't have a multi-strand approach. You sort of can't say, right, we're going to quadruple the population or whatever it might be, or we're going to try and attract this, that and the other into town, but have no way of getting people around the town. There has to be fully joined up thinking.
Yeah, and it's taken far too long. You know, and in fairness to our roads team, and roads design team, they have the plans there for, you know, the Leck Road, for the One Day Hall Road, the Bonagie Link, the bridge across the other bridge across the Swilly there at Native Lane Road. But we haven't got the resources to implement that. And we haven't certainly got the money yet. We haven't given the go-ahead. The Bonagie Link, we're dependent on the 10T. That's very advanced. They're talking about possibly 2025, 26. It might be starting, but when will it be finished? 2028? I don't think Letterkenny can wait that long. So what we're saying is that, you know, we're a regional centre, as you say. We have a vision for the future development of Letterkenny and the growth of it and the city. And what we need is for the NTA to take stock of that, to come up here, look at what we need, and to help and assist us in every way and any way that they can.
The court says the 4 lanes was the perfect opportunity for a bus lane to be installed, but they never took that opportunity. There's no forward planning around the town, so what do they expect? Another says Letterkenny needs a ring road. Nothing else is going to do it. When are they going to do something about this instead of constantly talking? Now, I think the sort of the relief roads or the roads you mentioned, effectively, you could probably end up describing that as a ring road. I don't think you and that colour are a million miles away in what's needed.
No, and that them plans are there. And as I say, in fairness to our road design team, they have been battering the door of the department. They've been engaging in public consultation. And like we're ready to roll out. We've been awarded monies. They've proceed with those plans, but we're still far away from getting the diggers in on the ground. And look, what we need to do is get national bodies to take notice, to come up here and be part of this. I mean, after all, we have been selected by the government as one of the 6 regional centres. We're seen as the potential for growth into that city. The Northwest City Region work that we're involved in also recognises that there. So what we need now is for the government to invest in that belief and that vision.
It should be an easy argument to make, because there are similarly sized towns with green buses, electric buses buzzing around all of the time. You know, this would take cars off the road, theoretically. You know what I mean? Particularly in this day and age, it should be an argument that doesn't even need to be had. But we'll follow with interest to see what comes from your motion. Councillor Donal Coyle, he's also going to ask the council to explain the reason for traffic chaos in the Kilmacrenan Road. So there's going to be a lot of talk about Letterkenny and its roads infrastructure at today's meeting. So for now, Councillor Jerry McMonagall, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Greg.
Bye-bye. Take care of yourself, and we'll have coverage of what comes of those motions later on. Today Around the Northwest is live from Donegal Education and Training Board's newest further education and training centre at the Business Park Road in Letterkenny. It's for their Student Welcome Day to kick off the new term. They'll find out more about the range of full and part-time courses, the Adult Guidance and Information Service, student support, and about the range of activities in the centre. So join us live on Tuesday today from 12 at Donegal ETB's newest further education and training centre. As I mentioned, that's on the Business Park Road in Letterkenny. So great bit of radio there. You'll get plenty of information. I'm sure if you're in that area, call in and say hello. That's coming up for you in about 9 minutes. A caller says, an age restriction on vapes could have been implemented at any point over the last 7 years. It didn't need new legislation as the provision is already in. Which begs the question then, why are the government saying that they need more legislation? I have an Airbnb for the past 7 years. Tell that lady she'll get approximately 2 guests like that each year. Unfortunately, that risk goes with the job. There you go. So there is an average of people that come in and sort of disrespect your property. But this caller says it's all down to the attitude of dog owners. Went for a walk in Dunluce on Sunday and coming back to the car was met by a group of 4 people with 7 dogs, not a lead in sight. Can you imagine if you had a fear of dogs? Fair play to Sinead for coming on and speaking about this. Dog owner needs to be more responsible, house trained, etc. Never the dog, always the owner, of course. And Sinead herself made that point. You know, the dog doesn't know what's going on. Hi, Greg. I'm an adult. I hate Halloween. I'm scared of bangers and I don't want people coming to the door. Last year, I had my door banged and people shouting, "We know you're in there. What can I do to stop it?" I mean, I don't know. Do you have a gate that you could put a sign on? I don't know. It's a time of year that brings an awful lot of fear. And that's off the back of a comment from a report from Garda Sergeant Eunan Walsh, which is really terrifying. Can you imagine someone... it was in Letterkenny, wasn't it? Put a lit firework in through the door of someone's house. Now, can you imagine the injury that that could have caused to an adult or a child sitting or playing in the hall? As it turned out, the door went on fire. They managed to control the fire. Thankfully, they were in the house and not asleep upstairs or something. But that is very serious crime. 5 years in prison, potentially, €10,000 fine. But we really need to talk to everyone who needs to listen and say, if you think that's fun, you really need to cop yourself on, because it's not fun, it's stupid. Because some people maybe don't know that. We got this email in from someone who didn't want to come on because they don't want to feel the ire of others. I live in beautiful Inishowen. Stunning, picturesque, amazing place. The people are wonderful and there's a great community spirit and an extremely generous, altruistic nature. There's a conversation needed to be had and I'm just not brave enough to have it in my community. When are we going to put an end to pointless and needless burning of fossil fuels as a charity event? This weekend, there was another tractor run in our area. I understand people are burning fossil fuels daily for both heat and transport, but as a community, collectively, burning fuel unnecessarily. Now, this is not something that's been brought up to me before, but this is someone that says tractor runs are really bad for the environment and it goes against community, I suppose, and charity. I think maybe they're implying there as well. Is that something to be considered? I don't know. You're already seeing now places with a reputation for fireworks displays going down the drone route. Now, I don't know what the alternative to a tractor run is, but maybe in the not too distant future, more people will agree with that listener and will say, really, should we be burning all this diesel? Let me see. Saw some disturbing posts and comments from Sinn Féin supporters on various websites, re-Hamas massacres. Seems the balaclava has slipped again. Well, I mean, yeah, Mary Lou McDonald was speaking on that issue, stating her party's policy on it. There's people, regardless of their political background, all have very different views on it. I don't have a view. I tend not to comment on something unless I have a full understanding of it, and I'm still working through that in regards to what is happening. All I know is an eye for an eye leaves, you know, everyone blind, effectively. And I'm still processing the justification of some of the stuff that's going on because of the historic stuff that's been endured, and I get that. but I'm still not in a space whereby if I can not think of little children being killed or women being raped and men having their heads cut off and being paraded on the back of lorries off the back of all the stuff, bad stuff that's happened. And that's in no commentary on it really in any meaningful way. It's just I find all of it so horrendous. I really, really do. Hi, Greg. Could you please ask if anyone else has experienced this? The doctor referred a family member for national diabetic eye screening. They rang to say it will be 5 to 6 weeks before forms are sent, and then you have to wait for an appointment after that. Thanks. I'm not sure. We'll throw it out there and see if anyone listening has a similar experience. I'm not sure. Is the option there to do it privately? I think some of the big optician chains do similar screening to that. I'm not sure if that will fit what you're talking of. Hi, Greg from Raymond. Gaza is the world's largest concentration camp of some 2.2 million Palestinians. And it's made deliberately by Israel. Indeed, some others describe it as the world's largest open-air prison. Incredibly heavily populated, and it's a tiny, tiny little land space with 2.2 million people in it. Right, that's where we have to leave it on the show today. Come back with us, will you? We're back with you tomorrow morning at 9. But for me, Greg Hughes and Caroline Orr, who researched and produced, have a great day.